Welcome to the AFL Ratings Podcast. We chat with Aaron Bryant tonight. We talk Geelong and Adelaide in round two. We also go through notable fantasy scores for the round. This podcast was recorded on Sunday night, 10 p.m. Australian Eastern Daylight Time, March 24. Make necessary adjustments as news comes to hand. Enjoy the pod. Okay, so let's welcome in Aaron this week. You did the Adelaide and Geelong game on Friday night. Pretty good win by the Cats, and they start the season 2-0 while the Crows start 0-2.
Yeah, really impressive considering the outs that they had, especially those late ones with Mitch Duncan and Tom Atkins, that they played a relatively young midfield. Jack Clarke in his third game was pretty impressive. Patrick Dangerfield at 35 continues to keep going. And Tom Stewart was just so impressive down back. And ultimately, that's where they really won this game. I think defensively, their structures are so good that they kind of force a panic entry with their front-on pressure. And then there's plenty of intercept markers floating across to cut things off. So Geelong are going to be right in the mix of things once again. A side that's only missed finals three times in the last 2 decades, they're probably going to be in the eight once again, which is remarkable. The list management over the years has been incredible. I mean, Jai Clark, as I mentioned, is the only first rounder they actually drafted out of the 22 that played on a Friday night. The rest are all kind of trades or rookie draft players or Irish signings. They just continue to find ways to get it done. And the flip side for the Adelaide Crows, their season's in a really precarious place now at 0-2 with Fremantle on the road to come, who look, like they're in decent form. Melbourne and Carlton after that. So, yeah, it's been a really weird start to the AFL season. There's a clear gap between, those unbeaten sides and the winless ones already.
Tom Stewart was outstanding in defence for Geelong, so it was interesting the tactics used by Matthew Nix in this game.
Yeah, I wasn't sure if it was more of a coaching thing or just the midfielders panicking because of the pressure, but we saw in the last kind of couple of months really of last season, Adelaide were quite fast and free-flowing and energetic and electric with their ball movement out of the middle and going from end to end. They're one of the better teams of scoring out of their defensive 50. But these first couple of weeks, they haven't looked like that at all, almost a shell of themselves. The pre-season, they've been practicing scenario-based training to try and, I guess, win more closer games because they fell short a fair few times last season. But yeah, maybe they've left behind that game plan by not really instilling it a bit more across the preseason, because it was wet on the Gold Coast at Carrara, but they still were really hesitant to go inside 50 until that last quarter where they had a bit of dare and they kicked those five unanswered goals. That was just basically off Rankin being injected into the midfield. And then Friday night, he actually barely had a centre bounce attendance. And again, they were more stunted with the way they moved their ball. It was, kick mark, and then bomb it high into the 50, and Tom Stewart was there to take the intercept mark. Taylor Walker was back into the side, which kind of contributes a little bit to them improving, but he looked a little bit sore. He had that back spasm the week prior, and he just wasn't as mobile as he's been over the past season. So whether or not, him not being available as a key leading target some of the times probably didn't help them. Riley Filthorpe not being there is a bit of a blow. So it's almost this perfect storm of, injuries, form, and a really rough start that has put Adelaide on the back foot.
One player that had a really good game was Jordan Dawson. He was excellent. He finished with 12 tackles there as well.
Yeah, it's a funny one with Jordan. I kind of thought Crouch and Laird played better than him, and realistically, his best game is his kick marking, where he can float back as an intercept halfback, but also, win the ball at stoppage. And I think Laird and Crouch are very similar players in the way they're in and under and wrestling for the ball. And Dawson's usually that outside player that can get them inside 50. And on the Gold Coast, because it was wet and rainy, he actually had about four or five attempts at floating across a pack where he could have taken an intercept mark uncontested, and it slipped through his hands. So that kind of impacted, his fantasy score, but also his influence on the game. And then Friday night, it was kind of similar. We didn't really see that dominant intercept marking. He really impacted through his tackling around the stoppage, 12 tackles, which was, I think, was an equal career best for him on top of his 26 touches. So I think there's another level of Jordan Dawson we're yet to see, that level where he had a really purple patch, where he was going, 140 plus for a while there. So he can only get better, hopefully, for the Adelaide Crows. They've just got to figure out what they're doing with this midfield mix, because albeit, Matt Crouch has been in tremendous form at the back end of last season and the start of this season, but I just don't feel like he, Dawson, and Laird are the mix that works. When Rankin's in, they just have a little extra spark, and he can't be there all the time because they need him up forward, but those three just aren't gelling.
I'll add another piece of info to this thread on Matt Crouch and Rory Laird and Jordan Dawson, that midfield mix. So Dawson has 769 metres gained, Rory Laird 202, and Matt Crouch 287. So Crouch and Laird a bit of it in under type players, but Dawson's the game breaker. So I just wonder if the Crouch and Laird, it's just the same player as you mentioned previously, whether there's some sort of change upcoming for the Crows.
Yeah, I asked Adam Kelly about this on Saturday in the fallout, the head of football of the Adelaide Crows, and he said he was really happy with how Matt Crouch has been playing, considering that the biggest knock on him is his disposal and its actual impact and how, deadly it is. Usually he kind of goes backwards, and that's why his meters gained are so low. So when you combine that with what Rory Laird's doing, you're right. Together, they're basically a half of what Jordan Dawson is doing. So they do need some forward momentum coming out of stoppage rather than these backward handballs. And Adam Kelly basically said he doesn't mind it in the sense that the handball chains free up the outside runner. We just didn't see a lot of it on Friday night. So I think there is going to be a change needed, and it's not going to be one of them gets dropped. It'll probably just be a bigger rotation. So whether, Rankin gets more minutes in there, maybe they throw Rochelle in a bit more. But it was just two same across Friday night.
Yeah, definitely on the watch to keep in mind what is going to happen with that midfield upcoming, and they've got to flip their season around, otherwise a significant change may be required. So let's move on to Adelaide and Geelong fantasy wrap here. I'll put them all in one group here. So Jordan Dawson 131, Tom Stewart 114, again fantastic in defence, and Matt Crouch again 110 points.
Yeah, Dawson, I was stoked when I started with him for that very reason I spoke about earlier, kind of his intercept marking and his high ceiling. And to get 131 off the back of that 89 in the wet just showcases, he's still going to be a top eight midfielder come the end of the season. It's, he's bounced back from that. Clearly, he's not going to lose too much money. I think his break even was 140, so he'll just drop under a mil slightly and he should bounce back from here. And yeah, pretty good run. Considering, Fremantle, Melbourne and Carlton, they're tough teams in terms of win-loss, but in terms of fantasy sides that he can certainly cash in on, I think, with his intercept marking. So that's great for him. Matt Crouch continues to be an amazing value option and a really brutal one for those who jumped on Ollie Wines. I think Matt Crouch is the clear winner there. So back-to-back 110 plus scores. He's quickly going to rise up in terms of his value, pushing towards that 800K mark. So if you're looking to move one of your Giants or your Suns players heading to this weekend, he's a good downgrade option to just make some quick cash because he's just going to continue to surge. And Tom Stewart, yeah, another one who he probably didn't have a massive first round, but showcased again why he's a top six defender because his ceiling is so high when he is intercept marking so strongly. So, a lot about this year is going to be the halfback players and those who can, bounce back, take those plus sixes and race up the wings. And then also those who are around the midfield. But Tom Stewart's kind of the exception to the rule where Geelong do like to spread it and switch it across the back line so much that if you count how many marks he kind of puts together over a game, he's generally a 100-point player.
Round two notable fantasy scores. So back to Thursday night, Isaiah Wenganyima-Liura. So he had 122 points. Looks like the Saints tried to feed him the ball as much as possible coming out of D50. And Jack Steele was impressive, 120 points in that midfield for the Saints.
Yeah, there was a worry, I think, with Jack Sinclair coming back in, how he, Bonner, and Wanganeen-Miller were going to work. And it just made him better, didn't it? It kind of released him a little bit more off that half-back flank that I mentioned earlier is where we're probably going to see the most prolific scores across this season. So, yeah, he's definitely a downgrade target. I'm thinking of even a Whitfield to him this week because he's going to be good value now off that 122 and a couple of good teams coming up next as well in Essendon, Richmond, who you should be able to get plenty of plus sixes with that ball moving off the half back line. Jack Steele's been a bit of a surprise. I thought his best was behind him. I think the multiple shoulder injuries, there was always a worry that he wasn't going to be the tackling machine he once was, but he's showcased it now twice, six tackles in round one and then 11 over this past week to get him to 120. So, yeah, he's actually was a really good value option looking back. He's going to be over 900K now, so it's difficult to justify that sideways trade unless you're moving one of your primos on a buy. But yeah, he looks back in good nick, so I'd certainly be pretty stoked if you started with him.
On to Saturday, so Fremantle and North Melbourne. Caleb Sarong again, 125 points, super in that midfield for the Dockers, 121 for Harry Sheasel, pretty much doing it as he likes through the half back line and also the midfield for the Kangaroos. And Tom Powell, awesome start to his season, 113 points.
Yeah, I think the Sarong and the Sheasel ones aren't overly surprising. You know, Sheasel's certainly got that half back line locked up, and Caleb Sarong's clearly their number one midfielder now for Fremantle. That the Power one is a little bit more interesting, isn't it? Considering the depth of talent at North Melbourne that's kind of being able to run through that midfield, but they've clearly invested heavily in him. He had the high CBA numbers of that game. So a player who probably flew under the radar a little bit in terms of options, but up forward at, you know, under 600K, all of a sudden he's tremendous value, considering that we don't have a lot of premiums down there and he doesn't have an opening round bye coming up. So it's a little bit risk reward, as I mentioned, because of the names that could possibly float in around him. But, you know, Lazaro being subs is a pretty big one, because we kind of thought he'd take up some of those midfield minutes. Jai Simpkin does, he's a bit of a shell of the player he once was. So I feel like that Wardlaw, LDU are definitely the two that are locked in. That third rotation I thought was going to be shared around, but for Tom Power to be the number one out of that game is a pretty promising side going forward, considering how competitive North Melbourne were.
On to Hawthorn and Melbourne. So James Sicily, 116 points.
Yeah, he
I
was
think.
hungry, wasn't he? A little bit of a bounce back after that poor performance last weekend.
He had about 60 points in that first quarter. So Hawthorn really slowed down their ball movement in that first quarter, but they were conceding scores against as well. So tried to fasten up after quarter time, and that sort of slowed down all those chip mark kicks for the Hawks. So again, Sicily, 116 points. Most of it came in that first quarter, well, half of it at least. And then Christian Petrarca was awesome for Melbourne, 109 points.
Yeah, I'm wondering in terms of that Hawthorn game plan, is it going to be consistently like this? Like, there's going to be games where they're going to be under the pump and they will, you know, shed around the back line. I'm a Massimo owner, so I was pretty stoked with how he went. But you're right, once, you know, Sam Mitchell was clearly getting frustrated and tried to change the game plan on the go. So I'm not sure if we're going to see those massive scores, you know, 40 points in a quarter every week. It could be more early on as the before the game slows down a little bit, but they've probably got to be a little bit more aggressive and show a little bit more dare. So yeah, don't expect, you know, your Weddles, your Massimos, your Scrimshaws to be pulling 90 plus every week. It's just not going to happen. And yeah, Petrarca, you know, clearly taking that midfield leader role pretty seriously. You know, Clayton Oliver's slowly getting back to his best, but Petrarca's never really slowed down, has he? Continues to float forward and impact the scoreboard, but continually finds his own footy. So he's just a very reliable midfielder, and one that I think flies under the radar a little bit. Like, for me, I like, you know, your Zach Merritts, because he every year you can pick him and he kind of goes 110 regardless by the end of the year. And Petrarca is starting to become that player where you can probably lock him in for a safe 105 by the end of this season, if not more. So he's not, you know, your headline chasing midfielder in terms of your Bontempellis and your Dawsons, your Rory Lairds, but yeah, he's slowly putting together a pretty impressive fantasy career.
On to Saturday night. It was a bit of a spicy game here. 122 points for Zach Merritt. He was outstanding. Defensive part of his game was actually quite good for the Bombers. As Isaac Heaney got there again, 117 points. And Errol Gordon, last couple of games have been super. 117 points again for him.
Yeah, the Heaney one was funny. He had a bit of a slow start. I reckon he was on like five by maybe it was like halfway through the first quarter, and then just absolutely unleashed. So those midfield minutes are working, and I'm just so interested to see what Horse does in the next couple of weeks when some of these big names become available, because Isaac Heaney's in Brownlow contention right now, and I don't think he'd change what is a winning formula. Errol Goulden, as you touched on, is getting around the ground much more, impacting the scoreboard. And just finding himself open a lot, which probably won't happen every week. You know, Essendon don't have a lot of transition defence, especially through the corridor. So he certainly cashed in on that. And yeah, Zach Merritt, we mentioned it before, the ever-reliable kind of F-bomber midfielder. No Darcy Parish once again, but didn't seem to faze him too much. Getting on the scoreboards helped him push towards a more of a mega score, but always on the outside, finding that you know, clear handball receive and then kick inside 50. The funny part about the early stages of his game, I think he had like 9 or 10 touches in the first quarter, but he wasn't doing anything other than handballing, and his score was so low. But you just had a feeling it was going to eventually skyrocket, considering the impact he was having on the game, and ultimately, yeah, getting to 122.
On to Sunday afternoon, it was Tim English, 112 points. Decent matchup for him against Ned Moyle. Marcus Bontempelli was pretty awesome, 104 points. And the Gold Coast Mids, Tuke Miller, 109 points. And Matt Rowe, 104 points. Both solid.
Yeah, I think the good sign for Tim English, I think Moyle was quite competitive, to be honest, but the part that caught my eye was Sam Darcy had actually had a really good game, especially when he was in the ruck, but it didn't hurt Tim's score, right? So that's the main thing. You've got an opposing ruckman who's had 25 hit outs of his own, plus you've shared a significant portion of those CBAs with your own teammate, and he's still got to 112. So clearly he's still going to be the best ruck in the competition by the end of the year, be fighting it out with Rowan Marshall, I imagine. But it hasn't hurt him, I think, which was the concern once they started to play these two together. I think Roy Lobb's well and truly out of this side now, unless something dramatic happens to Sam Darcy. So yeah, good signs for Big Tim, considering the amount of money that people would have paid for him. The Bontempelli one, he started a little bit slow, then had an ankle injury where he got caught in the tube tackle, and there were kind of panic signs that, considering the low scores he'd had last week, that he could drop under 100, under a mil by the end of this weekend, but managed to pull it back, which is really impressive. Again, hitting the scoreboard with a couple of goals. So rewarding those owners with a ton, but I think people want to see some of those bigger scores moving forward. And the hope is that Jack McRae, who added the 40 touches in the VFL, is going to come back in and probably relieve some of that pressure on Bont to free him up a little bit. And Tuke Miller, he started slowly as well in terms of his disposals, but was just a tackling machine from the get-go, which is the best of Tuke Miller when he and Matt Rowell are absolute bulls at stoppage. So he's in for another big season. He's got the bye, so does Rowell, obviously, which is will be a bit frustrating for some owners. What do you do when you've got these guys who are absolutely rocking and rolling, and you don't really want to lose them? His best 18 as it was this weekend, so maybe you can get away with it. Have a look at your matchups. Yeah, Tuke's was a little bit of a value option, and I think around the money that he's at, just having a quick look, I think maybe a Jack Steele side swap could be in the works if you have that luxury to do that trade.
On to mid-afternoon on Sunday. So Zach Butters 117 points and Connor Rosie at 116 points, both quite excellent for Port Adelaide.
Yeah, it felt like they were going to cash in considering how undermanned Richmond were. And the Tigers certainly brought the fight to the Power, but it didn't hurt, yeah, those midfield scores. Butters, I think, got a little bit more in the sense that he was just freeing himself up. So he'd go a little bit forward of the ball, find a hole, take the uncontested grab, turn, and then set up an inside 50. So he was a little bit more damaging, I think, than Connor Rosie, who certainly just has a bit of Scott Pendlebury about him these days. We touched on it a few times over the past few weeks, how he was ready to take another step, even though he was an All-Australian last year, that he's just got so much composure now. The game slows around him. He can walk his way out of stoppages. So Connor Rosie was impactful once again. And it was always a tricky one. I had Connor for a significant portion of the preseason in my team. And I just thought he was going to be a little bit better than Butters. Dropped down to Butters because just that 40K extra was just enough to finish off my team. And thankfully, the two of them have both been 110 players, right? So for that little less money, you're still getting a quality option. So there's no dramas with running with either, I think, is the main thing. A lot of people weren't sure about, if you wanted to avoid some of the bye players, could you run Rosie and Butters together? You definitely can. They don't hurt each other in terms of their scoring. And Wines, probably another one to throw in there, that with Jason Horne-Francis injured, he certainly got an uptick in CBAs, but still wasn't that dominant, really pushed himself towards an 88, but it didn't feel like he was ever that imposing on the game. So he's probably a bit of a bust now, I think, in terms of fantasy options. Probably time to move him on.
And the final one here, Tom Green, 120 points against West Coast. Fantastic start to his season.
Yeah, nothing stopping him at the moment, is it? Aside from a bye. Yeah, he's finding plenty of possessions. So the 130 last week, 120 this week, he's going to be the most traded-in player in round four, I think. So everyone's just kind of holding their breath. And the 120 will be frustrating because he's going to be pretty expensive by the time that bye round wraps up. But yeah, he's going to be absolute must-have in 2 weeks' time. The Suns, St Kilda, Carlton in the next three, he'll easily find some ball through those. So and no tagging options as well either. I think Windhager, from what we saw with St Kilda the other night, is probably going to play a bit more free. So no stoppers to likely shut him down. So he's probably going to be the best player in the comp in terms of midfielders come round four.
Absolutely. Okay, Aaron, where can the listeners find you?
So listeners can find me at Aaron Bryans on Twitter. We have SA Grandstand every Saturday at 11 on ABC Radio Adelaide, and you can hear it on the ABC Listen app around the country. I've got to check. I think next weekend I've got Port Adelaide and Melbourne on Saturday night, which is a pretty big game now. Two sides that would feel like they're top four. Port Adelaide, shaken a little bit by the Tigers, but unbeaten so far in their run. And Melbourne will likely be without Stephen May. It sounds like he's got some broken ribs. So, blockbuster game Saturday night, which you can hear from 7 p.m. Adelaide or 7:30 Eastern Daylight Time.
You can find me at AFL Ratings Beat on Twitter, AFL Ratings Twitter as well for the main account, and obviously aflratings.com.au for a stack of fantasy information. Well, Aaron, enjoy your week, and we'll catch up with you after round three.
Cheers, Pete.